Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creatives tonight are Ryan McCoy and Kevin Stevenson, writer and director of the new film, Butterflies. Butterflies is the tale of Becca and the journey that she goes through over the course of the film, culminating in a party where things are not what they seem. Check out butterfliesmovie.com for all information and where you can catch this amazing movie. This episode is brought to you by Jonathan of Jonathan Rackman Designs. Jonathan is an internationally recognized interior designer based out of San Francisco, California. He is one of America's top designers, and he has been featured in Elle, Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, The English Home, Travel and Leisure, Dolce, House Beautiful, and Luxe, just to name a few. Jonathan's memoir, The Garlic Peanut Story, is available on his website, jonathanrackman.com. 100% of the proceeds go to children's charities around the world. Jonathan wrote this memoir as a way to connect with his beloved sister's children and to tell he and Wewe's story so that they would know what a loving, accepting, and supporting person she was. Thank you to Jonathan for sharing his story with the world and for being a friend to the show.
Hey guys!
Hello!
How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Can't complain. I'm sorry I was late. I was still watching the movie. Okay, but I have questions. I have questions already. But first of all, it's very nice to meet you. I am Pup.
Nice to meet you. I'm Kevin. This is Ryan. Kevin.
Hi, Ryan. First of all, this film, I want to ask about how you shot it. The colorization that you used, like those muted, I'm not sure about the technical terms, but just the way it looks is so beautiful. And it adds this like foreboding feeling to it. Was that like an intentional thing?
It is, because we want it to all lead up to the eventual party. This is based off the novel called Party. So the muted tones are kind of like the naturalistic settings, and then once we actually enter the party, that's when all the colors just come to life, the pinks and the purples. So we use a lot of ambient, natural ambient light, like the street lights, overhead lights at the piers. And so we just kind of augmented those lights with our own cinema lights.
Yeah, and it looks fantastic. I mean, like I said, just from the minute you start watching it, it's kind of like, ooh. I mean, you know that you're not in for this like, ooh, happy, happy, happy movie ride. It's like, okay, we're serious. This is some serious content.
Starting at the first scene where the kids come out of the liquor store.
It's a little dark, yeah. And then Beckett, when she goes in the church, I also have a question about that. But yeah, just, and it, I felt like as it progresses, it gets darker. And not obviously like naturally darker, but the tone of it gets darker as well. And like you said, building up to the party, which it's kind of a funny name for it because it's a massive like downer, but yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the church with Beckett, the janitor, the Christ-like figure to me, was that intentional as well? He looks like Jesus. Okay.
That's why we cast him. Yeah. He is kind of like our faith man of faith, I think, is what we, he doesn't have an actual name, but
yeah, but he also like, if you, so it's there, right? We did our best, but it is there that the whole thing is actually all takes place in Beckett's mind, right? And she's bringing all the voices together in her head to this party to, you know, figure out what she's going to do. And so the man of faith, him, is like the first domino to fall. For, you know, she says, I'm looking for a sign. Just give me a sign. If that man never walked in, right? There's a whole other universe alternative where Beckett then, I don't know, maybe leaves the church and maybe goes and kills herself right then. You know what I mean? Because she never got a sign. So she asks for a sign, and all it is just the janitor walking in, right? Coincidence, right? Those things. But she takes that as the sign. And then what does he do? He kicks her out.
Right.
Forces her.
He rushes her. Yeah.
The universe pushes her in the direction. And then when she's at the swing set, she talks about it. Like she doesn't want to be, but like her body's just moving her, but she, her mind's way out here, you know what I mean? But somehow her body's just pulling her towards this party, you know, subconsciously, because her subconscious is moving us, you know, and her mind's just getting our way.
Right. I mean, it's like, it's deeper than the surface. It's, on the surface, it's, you know, this is what's happening. This is the girl. She wants to kill herself. You know, she wants to do this and this. But there's all these little like innuendos, I guess, or little nuances where you go, wait a second. Okay. And this is the kind of thing where you're further on into the film and you're going, wait a minute. Back then, you know, 30 minutes ago when this other thing happened, not a precursor, but
foreshadow?
Yeah, foreshadowing. It's so well done. I mean, it's fantastic. Yeah, go ahead.
We try to have every little shot have meaning, mm-hmm. and be referred to later. I mean, we tried to do that for every scene. You know, I don't know if we were very successful, but a lot of the scenes are left up for interpretation. Mm-hmm. We want the ending to be ambiguous. And so we just want the audience to think about everything. We don't want to explain it for the audience, but mm-hmm. we want the audience's imaginations just to run wild, you know? So to your point, I mean, we do try to foreshadow as much as possible.
Yeah. Now, is that a takeaway that you want to be set in stone, that this is all in her head, or is that ambiguous moment?
I mean, personally, I think any artist, right, Kev would probably agree, like the person's interpretation of the film, the song, the picture, the whatever it is theirs and theirs alone. And that's why art is beautiful mm-hmm. and great, mm-hmm. right?
It's constantly
I, as the writer, made sure, like, I mean, at the very last, you know, I'm like, hey, remember the line I made you cut, Kev? And he's like, and bitches too going to be there. Mm-hmm. I love that line. But if he said that line, that would somebody could really dig it down and be like, well, there's where it's not in her head. Yeah. So I mm-hmm. made sure that it's there. We didn't have the budget to be able to afford to be able to visually portray that as mm-hmm. as in detail as obviously anybody would like to do. You know what I mean? But I made sure that it was there on paper. So mm-hmm. then, you know, and then from whatever anybody's interpretation from there is their interpretation. Right. You know,
right.
Yeah, I don't think the actors really. I mean, we told them and stuff, but they're like, "I'm in high school," you know. Like,
mm-hmm. the real meaning is,
we're like, "There's a lot going on here." And like, I don't know.
So. Well, that is a lot of responsibility to put on your actors to, like, you need to make this believable. You need to make everybody feel exactly how I've written this. So, have fun with that, 17-year-olds.
Yeah, fortunately. Very, very, very fortunately, they all had copies of the original manuscript Party, right? And that's the reason I you know what I mean? I read the book first. I read it in a PDF, so I can't call it a book, right? But like, I read the story, and it completely touched me. And then if you go and look at like old Amazon reviews, like the book got published in 2010. If you look at old reviews, I read those reviews. That's what made me want the story, because I was reading mothers on there who are now like have teenage daughters that are giving them this book as they're going into high school as like a guide, you know what I mean, as like a guiding thing. And the book is much more intricate, more detailed, and goes beyond where the film does and stuff like that. I built more of a climax to it, but you're right, that's the magic that happens. But we gave them a lot of ammunition, mm-hmm. right, to have. And we knew that we were asking, more advanced technical and emotional acting skills than what we could, you know, are used to seeing or performing, you know.
Right.
And I think they came together extraordinarily well.
Well, yeah. I mean, you want to put that bar high so they'll meet it, mm-hmm. because if it's easy, it's going to be a lazy performance.
And they would say words like slang or nicknames for like some of the characters that like I didn't write in the script, but they would say, and they're like, oh, we call them that in the book. And I'm like, well, then you really mean, what do I know? Yeah.
I'm going home now.
yeah.
That's great. So how long, it was filmed in Oxnard, I'm not sure how to say it, Oxnard, California. How, like, what was your film time? How long did it take to shoot?
10 days.
Wow. 10
we shot all nights. So 10 nights, technically. Yeah.
Holy crap. And days. Then, yeah. And
we
then
took one day off, right? In between. So, yeah. So we did 6 nights of shooting in a row and then one night off and then
four nights to close it up, and we finished on December 23rd. The night of December 22nd, morning December 23rd, we were wrapped. So 2 days before Christmas, like 5:30 something. Yeah.
Yeah, people are leaving our set, going straight to the airport to fly back to the East Coast to be with their families.
Yeah, it was great though. It worked out. I mean, everything worked out well.
Yeah, it was tough because we would start at 4 p.m. and end at like 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. So 12-hour days, not just days, but nights. So mm-hmm. wrapping at 5 a.m. when the sun is coming up was pretty exhausting. But it was kind of nice because we knew we had a hard out once the sun came up. There was no more shooting. And so it was just nice to know that there was a hard out at that time. So working 12-hour days is tough, but knowing that it won't exceed 12 hours was reassuring. Because I've been on sets where we're pushing 14, 15-hour days, and just driving home is kind of dangerous, you know? So
Yeah, falling asleep at the wheel, for sure. So 10 days, that's amazing. Filmed all in on the one location, and the one area, multiple locations. So take me through. We've got Beckett, and she says, I'm the girl that everybody knows after she's gone. You know, everybody had a class with her kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then knowing that all of these other characters are the voices in her head or manifestations of the voices in her head, right? Like, or not manifestations, visualizations of the voices in her head. You know, Morgan is the one that's like angry and rebelling, and you know, oh my God, I forgot his name. Josh's best friend is the one, the reasonable one that cares about people, and he's looking out for people, and he's noticing everything for sure. So all of these aspects of her are going to meet up at this party, and yeah.
Well, so the film's called Butterflies, right?
For Butterflies,
right? Mm-hmm. And the story truly took on a transformation. The first screenplay that I adapted it as Party. And the first mm-hmm. table reading, I think we did it as Party. And then I experienced the same feelings Beckett had, mm-hmm. and the most real I've ever had them in this life, right? Mm-hmm. And finally decided to, you know, I'm going to do something about it. But overcame that, right? Transformed that darkness into light, right? But was left with the actual tangible knowledge of mm-hmm. the feeling of what that feels like. So, mm-hmm. And the opening line of the book is the opening line Beckett gives in front of the church. That's mm-hmm. what hooked me right away, right? The very second line she gives is me. So mm-hmm. the suicide was always there in the book. It's kind of like karmic, right? Timing, right? To find me. And then when she says, I'm going to put those words to the test tonight, that's me saying, I'm going to kill myself. Like, and I'm bringing, so all those voices are all different representations of me, different personalities, different traits I've exhibited throughout my existence here, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In this time. Was truly just a cathartic, you know what I mean, thing that I needed to do. Writing is my one thing that I do to get my emotions out, or the best thing I do. And mm-hmm. And when I did it, I just went in and did it, right? And I didn't even come up with the time. And then stepped back, and Kevin read it, and he was like, all right. And then I was like, I feel like we could change the title to Butterflies. He was like, yeah. And it made sense and it worked. And then we drilled in on that, mm-hmm. that aspect, and like, oh, let's bring butterflies. Let's, you know what I mean? When the tag in the opening, Beckett's a butterfly, man. You know what I mean? Like, we added that mm-hmm. line in, like, let's make it a theme and stuff like that. So it truly was, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, butterflies, I mean, if you look at what a caterpillar goes through to become a butterfly,
don't
the
they like
science
the
behind it? It goes into the darkest, condensest thing, and every cell of its being crystallizes. Every cell of itself crystallizes, right? Mm-hmm. And it births out something beautiful. You don't think it goes through like the most pain that it could possibly, you know, whatever pain that creature knows mm-hmm. in order to become that thing, and just, you know, has the
internal nature, knowing that everything will be all right in the end. If we can get that message across before mm-hmm. people take that leap and take that step, that's our only hope. You know what I mean? So like, right. it takes somebody, right, to has explored outside the cave to come back and tell them what's there. So, you know, I kind of feel duty to it. And Kevin, like, just graciously shepherded it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. really took the helms, you know, once he attached onto it and carried it over the finish line, Forrest Gump out the stadium, mm-hmm. still running with it. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's amazing. And the film is not in any way a glorification of suicide. It's I can't think of what the word is. It's a lesson. It's a cautionary tale, if you will. It's not like, hey, suicide's great. You know, look how cool it is. No, absolutely not. It's don't do this. You know, it's gonna mess up your life. But for you, Ryan, had those feelings, not to get too deep for you, I'm sorry.
I'm very open, you, by the way, about okay. all of it. Yes. But it's always that moment, and anytime no one's like, well, I can't kill myself. It's all good.
Yeah. Has that darkness had it been there for a while, or was it the subject matter that made you notice that you had that feeling?
It's it has been and is still an ongoing story that I am and have been documenting as best I can since it's been happening. I mean, I subconsciously was trying to kill myself with alcohol, like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Really doing that for like 20 something years easily. But I mean, I've been sober for 2.5 and I still, you know, and in my sobriety was like, nope, that's, you know, that's in my sobriety, I had the certainty. So that was like double certainty to me, right? I lost track on where I was headed with that, but
I mean, well, so you like, felt the suicidal tendencies leading up to production. In between finishing the script and filming, weren't you at your darkest moment?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a book and I published it. If you know, my YouTube channel, Ryan Rider, like, has, I mean, 4.5 years of me documenting. I had a traumatic experience like 4.5 years ago that I've literally, like, in the last weeks, like, in coming to full clarity and you know, story circle. But as I've been, when it happened, once I kind of, my world settled down, right, about a year afterward, I started putting content on the internet and exploring, you know what I mean, and obviously researching a lot more, reading, you know what I mean, just like taking in information, just always, and never having a filter and not caring about anything, putting it out there in any place, in any platform and space I could. And I'm still doing it, you know what I mean, and it comes in waves, right, you know what I mean, because it's hard to put that much effort into stuff and for nothing. You know, I'm just doing it because I know that by sharing my story, I know that it's helping people. I've already received messages from people that are like incredible, that you know what I mean, I want every human being to receive those types of messages. So if I can encourage every human being to just like do nothing more than what I'm trying to do, which is you know, face your demons and then share them with the world, you know, we all do that, like, and not we all, like, it just one person just has to do it, and then another person, then another person, another person. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have to boil the ocean at once. You just have to focus on yourself, you know. Right. That's it. So I'm just doing my thing.
Yeah, you never know what you put out there that's going to resonate with someone. You never know, someone could come across your video and be on the verge of, you know, and they're like, oh shit, this guy, he felt the same. You know, you could feel so alone in your own darkness. And if you see someone else, you're like, oh, hold on. It might make you, you know, think twice.
I want to say something else that not a lot of people would say in this type of thing. I want to say something about also the people who have never had a suicidal thought, whose life has been super blessed, who have both their parents, who have all their family, who have all these things, who have tons of money, who have all the riches, all the fantasies, all the things that they could possibly want, that like they should not look at anyone who's gone through my journey or a similar thing. And that shouldn't shake them either. They should feel good about all having all those things. They should feel good about where they are in the world and the love that they're surrounded by, right? Because I just know, right? So like, especially any young, right? Like, don't, if you have it, just don't, you know what I mean? Like, there is no—
Don't feel bad.
Don't feel bad, don't feel good. Mm-hmm. Find yourself, you know?
Right. It is a tough thing to find, to be empathetic without being pitying, you know, to understand someone else's journey, even though your life might be blessed, to understand them without looking down on them or pitying them.
And it's hard, but you know, we all know that the hardest thing is always the better for us, right? We all know that.
Right. Well, I think and it's so sad, but in just the last few years, mental health is getting the attention it deserves. You know,
I don't think it's the proper attention. I think, you know what I mean?
It can be bad.
It's like the father showing up to the seventh son's baseball game once this in the season. You know what I mean? That's still going to crush that seventh son. Because the dad didn't do that to the first or the second or the third until the son. But, oh, he's too busy. He's doing this. And this is my story. I'm just completely making this up. But that's how I feel that the mainstream just the mainstream discussion of mental health is. I feel like it's like that. Like, oh, we're talking about it. Look, they have no clue what's really going on.
Right. There's a lot of work to be done. Absolutely. And I like your analogy.
But here's the thing is the work isn't done by anybody else, but the individual. Mm-hmm. Each individual must do their own work, period.
Right.
So now I have done my work. I have been into my shadows and now I'm sharing it and telling it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want everybody else to do. You know, I'm not trying to start a movement. I'm not joining a foundation. You know what I mean? Because I know the answer. And the answer is every single human being must traverse through that shadow.
Right.
And it's scary as hell.
You can cuss. It's okay.
Okay. Oh, can we?
Yeah.
Well, in that case,
fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool.
You're cool.
Well, I mean, I feel like we've noticed there's diagnoses now that didn't exist 20 years ago. And insurance plans, they didn't cover, you know, a psychologist or psychiatrist or certain medications, right? You know, I mean, so there's been a change, and he's right though. You have to, the work itself, you have to do, but the understanding and the resources, they need to be provided as well from outside sources, I feel.
And acceptance, I agree too.
Acceptance
is a big thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the disembodied voice.
COVID has really brought it to the forefront. Mm-hmm. COVID-19. But this movie was not going to be held hostage by COVID.
Right.
We had to deal with all the COVID restrictions and precautions and regulations. We had a lot of people drop out because of COVID.
Yeah.
And told us we were crazy to make a party movie during a pandemic. And this is a movie that just, there was no stopping it. Even if we were to drop out, it was still going to happen, we felt like. So this is a movie that was destined to happen despite COVID, despite the popularity that mental health and illness is kind of happening.
This isn't a popular movie for independent filmmakers to make. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. No independent filmmakers are trying to make a film like this. They're trying to find a star first,
right,
and then they're trying to add action to it. Guns, let's SWAT, let's tack people up. Mm-hmm. They're trying to copy Hollywood. Hollywood wouldn't make this movie. We all know that, but people have accepted that Hollywood no longer makes films that make people feel or think.
Right.
I say no. Shame on you. But there are so many independent filmmakers that think that are just copying exactly what Hollywood is doing, and it's ripping the soul, the essence out of independent filmmaking, out of the spirit of us. We are artists in the most pure sense of the world. Unfortunately, our craft requires the collaboration and many resources of many people, many things to come together. It's a very difficult thing to maintain and hold that one vision, that one, you know, purpose you're trying, that message you're trying to portray. And we're not trying to get, I think it's pretty clear our intentions, you know, our intentions in making this and why we're making it, you know. I think it's fun. Yeah. Like if I was in high school, I would watch this movie like on repeat. If I got a hold of this movie like 14, 15 before, right? Because there's a lot of stuff in it. Stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, and I could like watch it without parents, it would become my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah. Well, the problem is you made a movie that has a party in it, and there's so many people stuck at home going, God damn it.
I know.
I want to go to a party. But no, in this position that I'm in, I've seen a lot of amazing independent films. And you're right. They're very saturated with story, with content, with, you know, meaning. And I've seen some quirky ones, we'll say, and I've seen some fucking good ones. They're not attached to a big studio, but they're phenomenal. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. And I know on an independent set, like it says in the about with the movie that you did camera work as well, right, Kevin?
Yeah, that's right.
And another filmmaker I talked to, on set, there was certain restrictions. They could only have a certain amount of people. She's the director. She's doing lighting. She's, you know, she's got the thing. And
right.
So she said there's a give and a take. You lose the money and kind of that protection of the big studio, but you gain so much freedom and you gain so much expression of your own creativity in your work, you know? So it's
now we just have to hack the distribution system and the theater chains. Once we get that, watch out. The studios are
right. Well, are you doing the video on demand?
We're doing whatever, you know, our goals, again, we're beginning to get offers, you know what I mean? So we're starting to navigate those waters, and, you know, what's best for the film and stuff like that. And again, it's difficult, right? Because now there are new things, new pieces of, you know, candy. To distract us and show us, but we're still trying to maintain that one thing when we first came together, our real purpose for even doing this, you know. So we're even taking that consideration into distribution, you know, like, well, how is it going? We have a target audience, target demo, you know, we're trying to reach teenagers in this country. How are we going to get to them? You know, which one of you is going to get us to them the best, you know?
Right.
I know how to get to them, but do you know how to get to them? You know what I mean? As well?
Well, I mean, there's the festival circuit, and I'm sure that there's specific festivals geared to the younger set.
Yeah, we're doing we submitted to Sundance. We'll see how that turns out, and then if we don't get into that, then next year we plan to probably hit the festival circuit pretty hard.
Yeah, and I know there's a ton of them. I have to ask, do you have coffee?
I did. I made some.
And you have candy.
Well,
we have candy.
Well, because it was
and the creative.
Yeah, so we
the trifecta.
Are we prepared or what?
You're my favorite guest so far. I'm telling you. Well, that's cool though. There's so many. I have them written down somewhere in my other notebook. But there's a bunch of like really cool festivals out there, and a lot of virtual ones. You know, by necessity because of
COVID. But here's the thing. I was telling Kevin, do 15-year-old kids go to film festivals?
No, they go to Comic-Cons.
Right. So how do we get into Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Thank you for, I hadn't thought about that. Thank you. Comic-Con's next summer. Let's go. That's where we need to try to show up at.
Well, there's a lot of different cons, and there's a lot of, what are they called? Like music festivals, like, what's that one?
Yeah, Burning Man and set up a tent and just have the film playing there on repeat. Come in, you want to chill and hang out, watch the movie?
Get some DVDs.
Right?
UDM.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah.
Merch. Come on.
There you go.
Cool.
Just help us out in just marketing.
That artwork that you sent me with the girl, like, oh, beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, let's just mention that's Sarah Cap Bellamy. And we actually, put a harness around her and strung her up in the middle of an intersection in Oxnard. 4 a.m.
In the middle of the night.
Mind you, in the middle of the night, in December, 35 degrees. And so she's actually being suspended in the air. And so I think it's just, we weren't even, I don't even know if that was really written in the script, but we knew that we had the opportunity to shoot in this intersection. And the genius behind that idea was, I think it's safe to credit Jesus Yanez with that idea. He came up with the idea of bringing two combo stands, a pipe and a speed rail across, and hanging, suspending our lead actress, Sarah Cat Bellamy. And then the rest is kind of just, that was like the shot, the best shot of the movie. So why not just make it the poster?
And absolutely.
Add to some butterflies. When you get to the end of the movie, you'll see, but butterflies actually come out of her. And so it just kind of is like the perfect ending to this story, I think.
Absolutely. Well, that's cool though. I hit the festivals and it, I don't know the ease of the streaming platforms, but it seems like that's where a lot of, not even just independent, a lot of big name studios are going that route, but there's so many. There's so many. It's like Apple TV, Google, what is it?
Amazon.
Tubi or, yeah, Amazon.
Tubi is getting really popular right now.
Yeah.
It's free. It's ad-based. Mm-hmm. You have to just kind of get through the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, Amazon is starting to do that too, where they provide, you don't need the Prime membership and the movie's still free. You just have to sit through the commercials.
Yeah.
So kind of, I love that idea, honestly, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it just kind of hits a wider audience. And so that's
everybody knows Amazon. Everybody knows Amazon.
And that's, it's like, if you had to pick one platform, it'd be Amazon, right?
Not counting theaters?
Well, no, not counting theaters.
Theaters or streaming?
Oh, I'd go theaters, of course.
I'd pick Amazon personally, but.
Why not both?
Exactly. And I think we will be blessed and be lucky enough to have a theatrical distribution in New York and LA, at least, you know, so we're banking on that. Maybe probably like a simultaneous release, theatrical and online streaming at the same time. Mm-hmm. That way we only have to release or market the release once, as opposed to two different releases, just because honestly, we're filmmakers. We're not like marketing geniuses. So we're already thinking about our next feature that we're thinking about. I'm getting hired to shoot short films, commercials, other features down the line. And it's just gotta just kind of just hone in on what I'm good at. And so marketing is not my strong suit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're reaching out to reviewers like yourself. Actually, you're the first reviewer to actually review this film so far.
Aww.
So we've reached out to like probably 20 other reviewers and people have gotten back, but you're the first person to actually have watched the film. And so you're kind of breaking our cherry. Whenever you release it, it's just going to be like a really great day for us. We're going to be really hyped and stoked to read
the review
and share it. So can't wait for that day. Don't make us wait too long, though.
No, it'll probably be out in the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic.
Yeah, awesome. I air twice a week, Sundays and Tuesdays. So I've got somebody tonight, and then I've got somebody Sunday. I could probably get you next Tuesday.
Excellent.
It
Tuesdays
depends.
Are my movie days.
You'll have to bribe me. Are you back? Are you back going to the movies? Getting out there?
We are. Like every Tuesday, we go see a flick.
Yeah, we've been on a roll.
Okay. What did you just see?
Dune last week, and then tonight's going to be the last night in Soho.
Okay. Did you watch Eternals yet?
I think we're avoiding the Marvel movies and the superhero movies. We'll probably see Antlers before that.
Yeah.
Spencer, maybe before that.
Okay. I'm seeing the theme.
I'm just waiting for, what is it? Stuberg's.
West Side Story?
West Side Story in December.
Oh, that's heard about that.
I see everything, taking everything, whatever, but I think I'm actively looking forward to it. Will be
the next one. Yeah. That'll be good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you guys, it has been a pleasure talking to you.
Hey, same here.
And please keep me posted on, you know, all the forward momentum of the film, okay? Wherever it's going to be, tag me, you know, tag me on social media and I'll retweet it or I'll share it and We'll go from there.
We definitely will. We hear back from Sundance the first week of December. And then from there, it's just submitting to film festivals and review sites and anything else in the works, podcasts, Q&As,
writers. It's going to be a while before it comes out. We've got a lot of time.
Yeah. And so when do you think we're going to sign a distribution deal? Any idea?
I don't know.
Tomorrow.
Still waiting for someone. Oh, before January.
Before January? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Manifest it.
I already have. Now it's just deciding.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Please keep yourself in the light. Acknowledge your shadows, but stay out of them.
No, I will disagree with that.
No?
It's important to go into the shadows. Because
don't lose your shadow.
It's important to go into the shadows because that is how we continuously grow. Life is continuously evolving. Continuously, everything is in motion. Absolutely every single thing is in motion, okay? So do not stay away from your shadows, okay? But do not go into them unprepared, right? Unknowingly, right? Right? Do not let the shadows come into you. You embrace the shadows, and from that you will gain more light, and then you will adapt that to your new body and raise your elevation from that, and then you'll see more shadows and you'll build up the courage to go into them, explore them, and continue to climb and climb and escalate throughout your entire existence on this planet before you transition this life into the next.
Wow. What's the name of your YouTube channel again?
YouTube.com/RhinoWriter. It's the name of my company.
It's at the beginning of the film I saw.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you guys keep in touch and let me know everything that happens, okay?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
You got it.
And enjoy your candy.
All right. We will. Thank you so much.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ryan and Kevin. Head over to butterfliesmovie.com to keep up to date on all the happenings with the film, where you can see it, where it's going to be on demand, and all of that. Head over to beunique.org. Love, follow, support my beautiful humans over there. I am on all social media as Pup Duffy. That's Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. You can like and follow the show on Facebook. It's Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. Again, a big thank you to Jonathan Rackman of Jonathan Rackman Designs. Head over to jonathanrackman.com. Purchase his memoir, his beautiful story of his life with his sister, Wei-Wei. 100% of the proceeds go to children's charities around the world. As always, take care of each other. Love each other. Watch each other's backs. And I'll see you next time.